Clancy on the line. Are you there, Sean?
Yes, I'm here. Is this Tim?
Yes, okay, you're on the air. And sorry, we ran late with our last guest. We got into a local topic. But let me tell people about why you're here. You're going to tell us about Archie's Betty. Were Archie, Betty, Veronica, Moose, and Jughead based on Haverhill people? We're going to answer some of that today. So our listeners know why we're talking about this. The new documentary, Archie's Betty, opened Saturday in Boston, and it's going to play again two more times this weekend, Sunday, June 14th, noon and 3 p.m. at the Institute of Contemporary Art. That's on Boston's waterfront at 100 Northern Avenue. And I cannot believe how low the prices are. $5 for members of ICA or students, and $10 for non-members. Now, Sean, in our discussions we've been having on Facebook, Sean, by the way, is co-producer of Archie's Betty. But what you may not know is I am a former vice president of the Haverhill Citizens Hall of Fame, and we inducted Bob Montana, the creator, although I guess Archie Comics disputes that, the creator of Archie. He was born in 1920 and lived till 1975. Now, Sean is on the program. He grew up in Lawrence and has been reading and collecting comic books since he was 8 years old. He spent the last 20 years researching the history of comics books. His work has been published in Alter Ego Magazine, Back Issue Magazine, The Comics Journal, Comic Book Creator, and Comic Book Artist. He's contributed rare material to about a dozen books on the subject and appeared on PBS Television's History Detectives. He became interested in old-time radio by listening to recordings at the Haverhill Public Library when he was 13 years old. He now resides in Bellevue, Washington, and he continues his old-time radio interest as vice president of the radio enthusiasts of, is it Puget Sound?
It is Puget Sound, yes.
And it's your birthday today. Happy birthday.
Thanks, Tim.
All right.
You neglected one part. I did live in Haverhill for a couple of years.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, 1979 to 1980. I went to the Hunking School at that time.
Oh, which is about to be replaced.
I'm sorry?
It's about to be replaced.
Voters. Yeah, I heard that. I saw that online.
That's right. So, well, then, well, good. So I have another Haverhillite on the phone. I thought that maybe the best way to introduce this, if you can bear with me, Sean, is that we will play the audio from the trailer with your co-producer, Gerald Peary. How's that sound?
That sounds fine.
Let's bring up the audio from the trailer. Chris is in master control. And there we are.
Did you ever wonder as a child if your favorite comic book characters were real? That was me reading Archie Comics. I believe the characters actually lived in Riverdale, where Archie and his friends went to high school. As I discovered one day as an adult, that fantasy wasn't absurd at all. That's when I came upon an extraordinary letter in a newspaper.
Riverdale is based in Haverhill, Massachusetts, and the high school is Haverhill High.
And that was like this Proustian moment. My eyes popped. The thought that Archie was actually based on real people. I mean, there's a real Betty, there's a real Veronica, a real Jughead.
And why, of all places, Haverhill, Massachusetts? That's because this guy was from Haverhill, the Archie connection. At age 21, he was the original cartoonist of Archie Comics, and he would draw Archie for three decades. Before that, Bob went from 9th to 11th grade at this location, and Bob's classmates believe he based his characters on people at Haverhill High.
My cousin Buddy Heffernan really was the one that was the character of Archie.
I really think that Arthur Tremblay was more of a model for Archie than Heffernan was.
Everybody that claimed that they were Bettys in my class, they all come out in the newspaper, all the Bettys. Wow, I wonder if it's me.
But maybe Betty's not from Haverhill at all. Flash ahead 70 years. Might a 91-year-old woman residing here be Archie's Betty?
The trailer for Archie's Betty. Sean, thank you very much for coming on. This is this is important work. You know, there may be all kinds of things going on in the world, but I don't think there's a topic more interesting to people from Haverhill than Archie's Betty. And that's the name of the documentary film at the Institute of Contemporary Art on Boston's waterfront this Sunday, June 14th, next Sunday. Is it also this Sunday, Sean?
No, it's just the 14th as far as I know.
Sunday, June 14th, noon and 3 yeah. p.m. So contact the Institute of Contemporary Art. Sean, we just heard, maybe you can help me with the title. He's co-producer, because you're a co-producer, but Gerald Peary is what other title does he have for this film?
He wrote and directed it.
He wrote and directed it.
Correct.
All right.
Yeah.
I guess let's go back to the beginning with you. Obviously, we heard during the trailer just about everyone has an opinion about who some of the characters are in Archie. Maybe for our listeners who aren't familiar with it, can you tell us a few sentences about Bob Montana and his Haverhill connection?
Well, Bob Montana, his dad was Ray Montana, a vaudevillian banjoist, and he traveled around the United States with his family, and their original name was Coleman, and they changed it to Montana for stage purposes, and eventually landed in Boston, where Ray Montana had a heart attack, and Bob Montana's mother, Roberta, met a person from Haverhill. His name was Harold Rodman, and she remarried Harold Rodman and brought Bob Montana's family to Haverhill, Massachusetts right after the flood of 36. And they stayed for 3 years in three different places, and he attended Haverhill High School while he was here. And then eventually in late 39, he moved to Manchester, where he graduated as a senior from Manchester High. So his Haverhill connections and roots in Haverhill High School were some of his fondest memories, and he kept a diary while he was here for about a year and a half to almost 2 years, recalling his favorite times, because he was in vaudeville, he didn't really have roots in very many places while they traveled around. So Haverhill, although they moved around three times, and Haverhill was one of the only places he stayed the longest at, and he created friendships with the people from Haverhill, and he was born in 1920, so he was a year older than his contemporaries in his classes, so he liked to hang around with people his own age, so he would hang around with people from the 1939 class year.
That was the illustrious class of 39, according to Haverhill High School folks, the illustrious class of 1939, like Barney Gallagher. I don't know if you ever got to meet Barney.
I met him and talked to him many times.
My former boss.
I'm sorry?
He was my former boss at the Haverhill Gazette many years ago.
Well, then you know what a nice guy he was.
He's absolutely a great guy.
And a straight shooter, very straight.
Absolutely.
And he did a thing called, I think, the Lamp Post in the Gazette.
That's right. One of the contributors, yes.
Yeah, he wrote about me on my search, and every time I came across something, I would tell him, and he'd write about it in the Lamp Post. This was probably 2010, 2011, that time frame.
That's right. He just passed away a year or so ago.
Yeah, correct. Well, I saw him at the Pentecost Place.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, I went and visited him and saw him. He wasn't coherent, though, when I saw him. But, yeah, I saw him right before he passed away.
All right. So we know some of the same people then.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, in fact, my aunt was at Pentecost Place. I put her there. I handled her estate. She grew up on 5 South New Street. And believe it or not, the person who handled her estate was Jay Cleary. Jay Cleary was the lawyer who was also on the city council, I believe, with Jeff Linehan.
All right. Well, he's not on the council, but he is certainly active on this. He's active on Channel 22 here, and I guess you're going to be doing some work with him as well. Is that right?
I have in the past. I mean, I haven't done anything on his show, but I'm familiar with his show, and I've gone to his lawyer's office several times, but we've never done anything official.
That's right. I think I was reading ahead. You might, I don't know if this is okay to say, you might be doing something at Northern Essex Community College with the documentary this year?
Yeah, it's actually published in other articles, so I'm free to say that, but we're working with NECA. Ernie Greenslade was also in the film.
I like Ernie.
Yeah, she was also instrumental in the 1988 event when they did the celebration of Archie with Gerald Peary at NECO College. It was probably a month long.
I remember that.
Although I lived in the area, I did not know about it.
Oh, what do you know?
Yeah, I moved here in Seattle in 1991, and so even though I was there, I was unfamiliar with the history of Archie and Havel, so it was a shock to me when I learned about it in 2010 all the way out here.
I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, Ernie Greenslade and I are talking about a September-type event, and it's likely, but it's not cast in stone yet.
All right. Let's go back to some basics. We read your biography. You've been enjoying comic books since how old? 13?
8 years old.
Eight.
Gave me the first one. Yeah, and you know, seriously, the research side probably since 1994, 95, somewhere around there.
All right. Now, when did you become an Archie fan?
2010.
Okay. All right. So Archie wasn't among your favorite reading necessarily, but you got caught up in the local history.
That's correct. Actually, I was a Richie Rich fan, and Dennis the Menace, and mostly superheroes and such. Though as a child, I thought Archie was boring and unrelatable to what I was going through when I was growing up. So it wasn't something I caught on until I heard about the connection, and then I started reading them and started appreciating the older ones more than the newer ones. And that's what got my interest up. And I said, who else is going to be more qualified to handle this type of research? So I took it on.
And now, unlike you, the director, Gerald Peary, he this will be in the film, but he grew up in the South, Jewish. He felt disconnected, and he lost himself in Riverdale and was amazed when he found out that it might actually be based on a real place. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah. His interest, I approached him in 2010 when I was doing a research for a book. I was thinking of just doing a book on this subject. And so I called him because of his 1988 article in the Boston Globe. And I asked him if he wanted to write it with me, which he declined. So what I did was I finally got some evidence that caught his interest in 2011 that I published in Alter Ego Magazine 102 that surprised him and continued on the research that he had left off. And that's when he wanted to join forces and still write a book, but then eventually moved into a movie.
How does it feel to have your research played out on film?
I've technically seen versions of it now for 3 years, so it's it's like finally going to see it released. But I've been going over it with him for over 3 years now, so it's I've seen every version of it you can think of. So it's going to be fun to finally see the reaction I get from people from Haverhill. That's really why I did this film. I didn't do it for the comic book people. I did it for the people for Haverhill. To help them out and get some recognition worldwide, which I think we accomplished in this movie.
Well, I think so, and I think it's a laudable goal. And actually, that brings us then, I guess, to what makes this so interesting. I think this will be easy for you, but can you give us a brief synopsis of the Archie characters from Archie Comics and how they might relate to Haverhill people, without giving away our ending yet?
not a problem, because some of this was covered in Jerry's initial research in 88, so it's all public knowledge. When Jerry did the 88 research, he looked into the characters of Archie, Jughead, Betty Veronica. And then he also tried to take on Principal, and he also tried to take on Miss Grundy. So, Mr. Weatherby was the principal, by the way. So those characters were the center of our research on the movie, since we wanted to play off of the initial research. So almost everybody he initially interviewed in 88 was gone. So a lot of the key players were gone. But in my research, new ones popped up. And so that's what we tried to cover. And for instance, the Jughead character from the Boston Globe article was Richard Linehan. Richard Linehan was brought up as Skinny Linehan in the 88 article, and we confirm it in the movie that we also think that he had a lot to do with the Jughead character, because Bob Montana knew Richard Linehan and hanged around with him at the chocolate shop and the Crown Confectionery. So we confirmed that they were friends and that they did hang out, and that they Richard Linehan and Jughead had a lot in common. We also took on other characters, like Arnold Daggett being Moose. I don't have a problem with saying this, but unfortunately, Arnold Daggett wasn't the influence for Moose, because Bob Montana didn't create the character's name of Moose. He had a character similar to that football player called Streaky in the comic strip all the way up until 1949. That's when that character's name changed to Moose. By a different artist.
I see. Well, that makes sense.
And Streaky was the nickname for actually Bob Montana's editor at Archie Comics, and his name was Harry Short. So the football player was, although the image of it looks like Arnold Daggett, the name was taken from Harry Short.
All right. And I suppose there are some local candidates for Betty, and watching a preview of the movie, there's at least a possibility that they at least influence the character. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, I would think several people may have influenced the creations of characters. Yes, like Betty. I do know that there are a lot of people making the claim that they were Betty, and some of it was worth researching because they did have some contact with Bob Montana in his high school years, so their stories were true. How much of it was cast into the creation of Betty, we're still unsure of, but we bring to light as much as we could in the film.
All right. Can you hold 1 second? We have to take a brief break, but we'll be back with Sean Clancy and Archie's Betty, and a surprise guest coming up right here on The Open Mic Show.
Open Mic! Tim Coco and The Open Mic will be right back. Get in on the action. Call 978-374-1900 or email tcoco@whav.net. If you are enjoying this program, please consider making a donation right now. Your donations to not-for-profit WHAV help keep these vital community services on the air. Donate online at www.whav.net.
Are you listening to WHAV on cable television? If so, join WHAV in thanking the board, staff, and members of your local public access channel.
Smart companies choose the Merrimack Valley. They're attracted by the region's technology and innovation, housing and education, workforce, arts, culture, and recreation, and convenient location and easy access. Learn more and look at profiles of all 24 cities and towns at the Merrimack Valley Economic Development Council website at merrimackvalley.info.
Catch the wave!
Melinda's Garden Moments help gardeners create and maintain a healthy, beautiful garden with ease, inside or out, and all year long. This is Melinda Myers, inviting you to tune in every weekday morning, right here on WHAV. You'll learn creative ways to grow your own vegetables and herbs while beautifying your landscape. Eco-friendly lawn care, flower garden design basics, unique container gardens, attracting birds and butterflies to the landscape, and much more. Again, please join me weekday mornings for Melinda's Garden Moment for a very environmentally friendly approach to gardening. Remember, only local radio can bring you this feature opportunity, but only WHAV does.
This is Take 2 Movie Review. I'm Mike Friend. This week, Worth the Wait. It's been 3 decades since Tina Turner's theme song for the last Mad Max Desert Dystopia movie saturated the FM airwaves. Now the franchise is back with Mad Max Fury Road, and not only has it not missed a beat, director George Miller has turned it up a notch or six. We first meet the new Max, the versatile Tom Hardy, as he is captured by the Immortan of the Citadel, played by Hugh Keith Byrne, Toe Cutter in the original. Max is a man of few words, like everyone on screen here, and transmits his thoughts and emotions with action and facial expression. Word has it that there wasn't even a traditional script for this picture, just a series of over 1,000 storyboards. Hardy's co-star, Charlize Theron, is the one-armed, crew-cutted, gritty Imperator Furiosa, hence the subtitle Fury Road. She is one of the Immortan's drivers, whose decision to smuggle his most prized possessions, his harem of pregnant wives, out of captivity in the Citadel, instigates the movie's action. That action is a wonderfully choreographed desert car chase, first to the place of Furiosa's origin, and then back to the Citadel. The feminist slant, especially in the last third of the film, is as effective as it is surprising, and the vehicles in the film are beautifully grotesque mashups of 70s muscle cars, armored vehicles, and trucks, and are almost worth the price of admission in and of themselves. Starting with the Chemical Brothers being tapped for 2011's Hannah, directors have been calling more and more on electronica artists for scores. Miller has Junkie XL working here to excellent effect. There are 100 ways Mad Max Fury Road could have stumbled, and it missed them all. This one is a ride for the ages. This has been Take Two Movie Review. I'm Mike Friend. Catch up with us at TakeTwoMovieReview.com and follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Take2_Review.
From the Edwin B. Johnson Newsroom, WHAV presents the Open Mic Show with Tim Coco. Make your voice heard. Call 978-374-1900. That's 978-374-1900. Or email tcoco@whav.net.
Back to the Open Mic Show. I'm Tim Coco. This hour of open mic being brought to you by the Merrimack Valley Economic Development Council. Smart companies choose the Merrimack Valley. We have Sean Clancy on the line from Bellevue, Washington. That's where you are. Is that right? Sean, you got his audio up?
Yeah.
Sean, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, all right. I just want to make sure. Tonight also was the launch of a bunch of new technology here, which we're working through, so pardon us. I know that we have another interviewee. Do you think she'll stand by a little while longer?
Yes.
All right,
yes,
good.
She's hanging by the phone.
All right, so then let's just go through a couple of other things here then. Now, as you were doing the research, now obviously you... your objective, you're a writer, but did you find yourself rooting for anyone as the candidates for the characters?
Yeah, actually, there was one person that I had several phone calls with. His name was Art Tremblay, and he lived up in Maine at the time, but he was from the class of 1940, and he and I hit it off really well on the phone, but he was terminally ill, and he grew up with Bob Montana, and he went on trips with Bob Montana. They hung out together. They played baseball. They did all the fun stuff, and he's mentioned in Bob Montana's diary in several events. He knew Bob very well, and I, just from the stories I heard, I recognized a few of them actually being Archie stories in the early stages in comic books, so it was pretty fun to realize that I recognized that, yet he didn't. And he wasn't moved by being a candidate for Archie when I brought up the discovery. So he was impartial to that and wasn't impressed.
All right, so here's someone who wasn't claiming a role, but you could see one from your research.
Yes. Just like one of the Betty characters that we discovered that I thought might be a Betty. Just like when I approached that person, I got the same reaction from her.
All right. Now, just in case our listeners aren't familiar, I hope that's not the case, but if they're not familiar, maybe we'll go through a couple of the scenes of Riverdale and compare them to Haverhill. The chocolate shop, spelled conventionally at a Haverhill retail outlet, was spelled what? Chocolate, C-H-O-K-L-I-T in Archie Comics?
That's correct.
And you think that's a pretty good match? And I think in the photo, in one of the screen captures you had on your documentary, a place that I wasn't familiar with is the confectionery store.
Yeah, it was called the Crown Confectionery, and it's where the Pawtucket Bank is now. And it was definitely it predates the chocolate shop and the appearances of the Archie gang. In 1941, they hung out at the Crown Confectionery when Bob Montana was still doing the strip before he went into the war. After he got out of the war, that's when he started introducing the chocolate shop. But it was the Crown Confectionery for the first couple of years.
All right. And then some other imagery. The Thinker sits in front of Riverdale High. Is that right?
That's correct.
The Thinker sat in front of Haverhill High. Still does, but different location now. And what other images that might we recognize?
Well, the things we didn't include in the film because it would just wear it down was stuff like Plug Pond. Plug Pond was mentioned in the second appearance of Archie in the comic books in January of 42. And the first opening scene has Archie and Jughead and Betty skating on a frozen pond, and it's called Plug Pond.
It was actually called Plug Pond.
Correct.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah,
all right.
And also there'd be Hooker and Howe Costume Shop is mentioned in the Archie strip, Coach Mansfield, Coach White. It was just a lot of stuff that I was finding in the early Archie strips in the 1941, 42, 43 time frames.
All right. Now, during the movie, and I even noticed it in the disclaimer at the, I don't know if movie is the right term, the documentary, even at the very beginning, I noticed the comment that Archie Comics is not involved. And it seems like there's always been a little bit of friction with the folks at Archie Comics. Can you speak to that for just a bit and what might be the reasoning behind it?
Well, I can't speak for Archie Comics. They never addressed us in any official capacity on why they didn't want to have any involvement in the movie. Jerry Peary was actually the person who had that relationship with Archie Comics and asked them if they'd like to see the film. So they have seen the film, but they declined to participate in it or have any involvement with it whatsoever. And unfortunately, they haven't given us an official response. Since 1988 till today, we still do not have an official response from Archie Comics on why they don't want to be involved with this type of research.
What would be your speculation, if you're comfortable with that? Is it publisher's ego or copyright law?
It's a good question, because I think we tried to address it in vague terms in the film, where we gave different people's versions of how things came about in the early days.
And you did a very good job. You did a very good job with that in the film, and I do hope people will see it.
Right. Yeah, we tried our best to try to get everybody's version out there. We make no claims to anything. We tried to submit all the evidence that we had available to us, and let the audience decide on what they believe and don't believe.
All right. Because it's your birthday, I thought, since you're also a radio enthusiast and we're discussing Archie, if you could bear with us, we'd like to end the hour with a cut from the Archie radio show. And then if you would hang on, we will, during the news, bring you and the most likely candidate for Betty on the air. Would that work for you?
That sounds great. I actually knew the cast of the Archie Andrews radio show, by the way.
Oh, you did? Well,
yeah.
I used to go to a lot of conventions, and so I'm assuming you at least knew Bob Hastings, the second Archie.
Absolutely. He was a very Rosemary Rice and Hal Stone, all three of them. Yeah, they were great guys and great people in real life.
All right. So this is our sort of birthday gift to you. We'll play the opening of the Archie radio series, and we'll go into news. And when we return, Sean's going to help us talk with a very special guest who may very well be Archie's Betty. We'll be, can you go, Chris, go to that audio, and then we'll be right back.
Hello?
Hello, Jughead, this is Archie. Come over right away. It's a matter of life or death.
Aw, relax, Archie. Relax.
Yes, here he is again, the youngster millions of readers of Archie Comics Magazine know and love so well, Archie Andrews and all his gang.
Tim Coco and the Open Mic will be right back. Get in on the action. Call 978-374-1900 or email tcoco@whav.net. If you are enjoying this program, please consider making a donation right now. Your donations to not-for-profit WHAV help keep these vital community services on the air. Donate online at www.whav.net.
It's 8:03.
WHAV Merrimack Valley. WHAV is a not-for-profit service of Public Media of New England, Incorporated. It's heard on 1640 AM, the web, at whav.net, and participating cable television stations.
Here's what's happening in local news. A request to allow used car sales at an East Broadway auto service business returns to the Haverhill City Council Tuesday night under so-called, quote, specific and material change, as found recently by the city's planning board. Petitioner Devin Tucker for Ideal Cars and Service Center, 79 East Broadway, is asking the council's approval on a revised special permit request for a two-vehicle used car sales area within a privacy gate. A previous proposal to allow a 10-vehicle used car lot on the property was rejected by the council on March 24. The Haverhill Planning Board held a public hearing on the revised repetitive petition on May 13 and was forwarded to the council without input or comment on the merits of the application, according to Economic Development and Planning Director William Pillsbury. Under zoning ordinance, the used car sales proposal could not be reheard by the council for 2 years without the Planning Board's finding. Previously, neighbors and other community members had voiced concerns about potential impacts to the neighborhood, including parking spaces and traffic and safety issues for pedestrians. Also on the council agenda, further discussion is expected on the city's plan to allow a solar farm on a capped portion of the former Bradford landfill on Groveland Road. A vote on whether to authorize Mayor James J. Fiorentini to enter into a net metering agreement with solar energy operator Sun Edison was delayed 2 weeks ago, due to concerns over visual aesthetics and the financial benefit of the city purchasing net metering credits over a 20-year span. The Haverhill City Council meets at 7 p.m. Tuesday in council chambers at Haverhill City Hall. An investigation is ongoing in Methuen into the drowning of a 5-year-old child who police believe fell into a covered in-ground swimming pool Sunday afternoon. Emergency responders were initially called at about 12:39 p.m. Sunday to a home at 3 Russell Street, Methuen, for a report of a missing child believed to have fallen into a backyard pool which had not been used in several years, according to Methuen Police Chief Joseph Solomon. Quote, the child was being watched by a 15-year-old babysitter. It appears the child exited the house unknowingly and stepped onto the cover and fell in, Solomon said. The child was located in the pool at about 1 p.m. as responders searched in dark, murky waters and in zero visibility. The unidentified 5-year-old was transported to Lawrence General Hospital and declared deceased at approximately 2:27 p.m. A Methuen firefighter received facial injuries when he fell on slippery stairs leading to the pool, Solomon said. An investigation is ongoing with assistance from Massachusetts State Police detectives assigned to Essex District Attorney Jonathan Blodgett's office. Two Haverhill motorists faced drunken driving charges in district court following their arrest by police over the weekend. Retired Haverhill Deputy Fire Chief John J. Landers, 62, of 28 Wayne Street, Haverhill, was arrested at 3 p.m. Friday by Haverhill Police on Lincolnshire Drive. He was charged with operating a motor vehicle under the influence, second offense, failure to keep right, and leaving the scene of an accident with property damage. Also, according to Haverhill Police, Garrett Hammond, 22, of 54 Old Yankee Road, Haverhill, was arrested at 12:50 a.m. Sunday at 1109 Broadway. He was charged with operating a motor vehicle under the influence of liquor and negligent operation of a motor vehicle. Two Haverhill residents face assault-related charges in separate incidents following their arrest by Haverhill Police over the weekend. Haverhill Police report Michael DeVoe, 21, of 57 Beach Street, 2nd floor, was arrested at 2:20 a.m. Sunday and charged with a single count of assault and battery. At 6:43 p.m. Saturday, Haverhill Police arrested Douglas Beckford, 56, of 81 Winter Street, Haverhill, on a charge of assault with a dangerous weapon. The arrest occurred at 56 River Street. Two Haverhill men are due to be arraigned in district court on public drinking and other charges after their arrests in connection with a disturbance Saturday evening on Washington Avenue near Railroad Square. Haverhill Police report Jose DeFrancesco, 40, of 295 Salem Street, and Joel Tarrant, 44, of 12 Wingate Street, were arrested at 7:30 p.m. Saturday. Each is charged with drinking in public and trespassing. Tarrant was additionally charged with possession of a Class E drug. Storm conditions Sunday caused damage to an exterior facade at Andover High School and temporarily delayed a scheduled dance recital event. No injuries were reported. Attendees were brought to the school's cafeteria while Andover fire crews and building inspectors surveyed the damage, according to online posts. The recital event went on after it was determined the affected building remained structurally sound. In local high school sports, the Haverhill Hillies girls varsity softball team is scheduled to travel to Pentucket Regional High School Monday afternoon to take part in a scrimmage. Meanwhile, the Whittier Tech Wildcats girls varsity softball team hosts Blackstone Valley Regional in state vocational tournament finals. For more details, visit whav.net. Remember, WHAV is the only Haverhill-based news source, and it's always free. In the Edwin V. Johnson Newsroom, this is Dana Esmail.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Rebecca Foster. The White House says the expiration of key provisions of the USA Patriot Act, which allows for bulk data collection, is impacting counterintelligence operations. The U.S. Senate failed to extend the provisions by a deadline of midnight on May the 31st. However, White House spokesperson Josh Earnest would not name specific examples of how the Patriot Act has helped protect the country in the past, or say whether Americans are less safe now since the provisions have expired.
Well, again, I'll let people draw whatever conclusion they would like. But the fact that I can confirm for you is that there are specific tools that our national security professionals had previously used to conduct national security investigations that they can, as of today, no longer use because of the partisan dysfunction in the United States Senate.
The U.S. Supreme Court has ruled 8-1 in favor of a Muslim woman who was denied a job at a major U.S. clothing retailer. Managers at Abercrombie & Fitch denied Samantha Elouf a job because she wore a headscarf. Our U.S. correspondent Daniel Wrenches reports.
In 2008, Samantha Elouf met the employment criteria for a job at an Abercrombie and Fitch store in Tulsa, Oklahoma. But after seeing her headscarf, managers assumed she was Muslim and denied her the position because they thought the headscarf didn't comply with their employee dress code. Justices of the U.S. Supreme Court agreed that she'd been discriminated against and that the retailer violated her civil rights by failing to accommodate a religious practice which would not have required undue hardship for the store. Daniel Wrenches, Washington.
Europe's major oil and gas companies are calling on the United Nations and on governments around the world to introduce a carbon pricing system that can help cut back global warming. The joint announcement by six oil and gas giants comes ahead of major climate talks in Paris this December. Here's our UN correspondent, Li Ling Tan.
British multinationals BG Group and BP, along with Italy's Eni, Norway's Statoil, France's Total and Royal Dutch Shell, have announced their shared readiness to help reduce carbon dioxide emissions. The party of six oil and gas majors want to collaborate with the United Nations and governments around the world on a carbon pricing system. They say such a system would discourage high carbon technologies while encouraging investments in the right low carbon options. Their announcement comes as governments are meeting in Germany on a UN deal to fight global warming ahead of a major Paris summit on climate change later this year. Li Lingtan, New York.
For more of the day's top stories, you can follow us on Twitter at Feature Story. From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Wave weather.
I'm WHAV meteorologist Gary Best with Wave Weather. Overcast, damp, and chilly weather through the night. Low temperatures mostly in the mid to upper 40s with periods of moderate rain. During the day on Tuesday, periods of rain will continue, tapering to showers during the afternoon. High temperature in the 50s. Clouds at night in the 40s and turning out mostly sunny by Wednesday afternoon. High temperature low to mid 60s. This is Gary Best. Your next wave weather is coming up in 30 minutes.
Those Boston stations don't always understand weather in the Merrimack Valley. Stay informed with Wave Weather every 30 minutes, 24 hours a day on Soft Gold, WHAV.
From the Edwin V. Johnson Newsroom, WHAV presents the Open Mic Show with Tim Coco. Make your voice heard. Call 978-374-1900. That's 978-374-1900. Or email tcoco@whav.net.
And we're back on the Open Mic Show. This hour of Open Mic being brought to you by the Merrimack Valley Economic Development Council. All right, before anyone says anything, thanks to our phone company, Sean is going to be able to hear everything, and Betty, I'm going to have to tell you what Sean is saying until we can solve that problem. But Sean, would you be so kind as to tell us something about the person we're about to hear and how you discovered the real Betty?
Okay. At 1941, Bob Montana wanted to become an artist, and so he moved to New York, where he had an aunt that lived in New York, and he stayed with his aunt. And while he was taking art lessons and learning the trade, he tried to get jobs at comic book companies because that was the lowest on the totem pole for artwork-wise. They would basically hire anybody that knew how to draw. And so he was interviewing with several companies. He worked at on True Comics at one point, and then he went to MLJ Comics, which later turned into Archie Comics. So at MLJ Comics, they hired him, and they were located at the Western Union Building in New York. And while he was going to the Western Union Building and striking out friendships with a man named Harry Lucy, who was a little older than himself, but they got along great. And while they were at MLJ drawing comic books and such, they would socialize after hours also, and on their way out of the Western Union Building, they would stop by a restaurant that was located on the first floor on the Western Union Building, and there were two ladies there. They were sisters that both Harry Lucy and Bob Montana had an eye for, as well as just about everybody else in the building. And they got up the nerve to approach him in the lobby. And one of those ladies is a candidate for the Betty character. And how I found her was in my research. I was calling up people who worked at MLJ Comics that were actually still alive, or relatives of, you know, wives and sons. And one of them mentioned that Harry Lucy, who passed away in, I believe, 82 or 84, maybe Betty will know that, but anyways, someone who knew Harry Lucy mentioned that there was a connection to the Betty character to someone that was related to Harry Lucy. So I tried to track down a Harry Lucy relative and found one of the, it's a long story, Rich Rubenfeld basically put me in contact with Harry Lucy's daughter, Barbara. And Barbara knew the whole story. And she mentioned that she had an aunt that was the Betty character candidate, and that she was still with us. So she put me in contact with that lady, and basically Harry Lucy's wife had a sister at the Western Union building that went out with Bob Montana, and her name is Betty. And her maiden name is Tokar. So Betty Tokar was the candidate that I came up with for the Betty character.
All right. Betty, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Well, Betty...
I don't hear Sean. Is that the way it's supposed to be?
Well, unfortunately, thanks to a little phone company problem, but everybody can hear you and everybody can hear Sean.
Okay.
You just can't hear each other. But, Betty, you are the leading candidate for Archie's Betty. And I read, and I did see a preview of the documentary, you weren't sure you were the model for Betty. How do you feel now that you've seen the evidence?
Well, I'm convinced more than ever now, knowing, having met Bob Montana, not knowing anything about him beforehand, and knowing him and dating him, I just feel that that's the way it is.
All right. How did you meet Bob again?
We worked in the same building in New York, 60 Hudson Street, New York. And my sister and I worked there. And we were leaving the building. And as we were going through the lobby, these two very nice gentlemen stopped us, introduced themselves, and they said they'd like to date us. And we said, well, we work in the same building. It's safe to go out with them. And we consented. And we went out the one time, and we made a future date. But this is the ironic part. I wasn't dating Bob Montana. I was with Harry Lucy.
Oh, okay.
And the next date we had, they switched partners. Harry wanted my sister, and then Bob wanted me.
It sounds like something right out of Archie Comics.
That's right. That's exactly so.
All right. So when you were dating Bob Montana, did he ever give you any indication directly that you were inspiring his work?
No, not then. But when I saw the comic books, he did have me in them. He had me as a secretary, and another time he was I don't know how it came about, but I was a student and I got 100% in algebra. So, and I don't even study algebra.
Oh, okay. Wow, so so Betty, you got a call from Sean, and you're now pretty convinced. And if you know, my mother would yell at me for saying this, but I think you deserve the recognition. You're 94 years young now, is that right?
That's right, 94 and a half now.
All right. And I saw a preview of the movie, and I want to make sure our listeners and viewers know that the movie Archie's Betty, it opened Saturday in Boston at the Institute of Contemporary Art. It's going to be back there Sunday, June 14th, two showings at noon and 3 p.m. And that's at 100 Northern Avenue on Boston's waterfront. I don't think I asked Sean this earlier, but have you seen a preview of the documentary, Betty?
I don't know what you mean by the documentary.
Oh, the movie. Did you see Sean and Gerald's work yet?
The only thing I saw was the movie they made when they visited me here.
Okay.
The film that they made here.
All right. I believe Sean gave me a schedule. I don't have it in front of me, but Sean, if you're still with us, when might Betty see this documentary?
Well, actually, she has seen the film that we are putting out there. I think the terminology of documentary.
Oh, okay. Well, right. All right, so Betty,
yeah,
you...
She has seen the film.
Okay, Betty, you did see the film. I used the term documentary, but whichever the rest, film, movie, I don't want to offend the people who put it together, so I was maybe elevating it to documentary. All right.
I saw it. I was very... And first of all, they improved on it, and I got the final DVD... And I played it here at the residence where I'm staying, and I thought it was very well done. They made so many changes that improved it, and I was very pleased with it. Have you seen it?
Yes, I did, and I have to tell you, you know what really impressed me?
No.
You touching your toes. I can't even do that myself. In your exercises.
I could still do it, even though I can hardly walk. I can still do my touching.
All right.
I always kept physically fit.
All right.
I don't know why I'm in this. I fell so many times that I just am knocking myself out.
All right. Well, you look great on the film. Did Bob Montana ever mention anything about Haverhill that you recall?
About himself?
About Haverhill, about the city of Haverhill?
No, but well, he did very little talk about himself. I didn't even know he did Archie Comics until later on.
All right. Yeah, I didn't know how many inspirations he might have mentioned in conversation. But so, Bob, you know, we don't know. You know, we brought Bob Montana into the Haverhill Citizens Hall of Fame maybe 20 years ago now. But we don't actually know a lot about him. Maybe that's because he was a kind of a quiet person and expressed himself through his art. How would you describe him from your best memories?
Well, the way I can describe him is he's a wonderful, wonderful person, wonderful gentleman to begin with, and very kind, and he's just a lovable person. And his family should be very proud of him. Let's see what else I can say about him.
No, that's great. So,
I to this day I just love him.
All right. So, is the rest of your family calling you Betty Cooper now?
They do. Yeah.
Sean, are you convinced that Betty Tokar Jankovich is Betty Cooper?
In my opinion, absolutely. When I had my discussions with her early on, and she was describing dates she was on with him, they were actually Archie stories that she had never seen. So I had to send them to her after she described her dates, and she got a big kick out of those. And during the dating stages when she was with Bob, he was actually drawing superhero comics. So he gradually created the Archie strip while they were dating, but never really told her about it.
All right, so Betty, Bob was drawing you and telling stories that you didn't even know about. So you were being published on pages before you ever realized it. Is that right?
That's right.
And when you told Sean the stories of your dating, were you surprised to find out that they had appeared in print?
Yes, I was, because he was very, I don't know why, he never mentioned his work at all to me. I met his mother and his sister, and they seemed very, very nice. And we even went away on vacation with his mother to a cabin in New Hampshire. And let me tell you a nice thing. When I got there, I lived in New York. I took a bus up to the Meredith, and he came to meet me in a rowboat.
Really?
I thought was very sweet.
Oh, isn't that nice? It sounds like something right out of Archie Comics.
That's right, yeah.
All right. And, well, it's a... I have to say, again, I did see you on the film, and you're beautiful, and I can only imagine that was a great inspiration for Bob Montana to create the beautiful Betty Cooper.
Wow.
So, all right, we're just about running out of time, but the real Betty Cooper, Betty Tokar-Jankovic, you're in New Jersey, is that right?
Is that, yes.
Well, thank you so much for joining us here in Bob Montana and maybe Archie's hometown of Haverhill, Massachusetts.
Well, thank you for having it. I'm very happy to have this interview. But I can't rave enough about Bob Montana as a person. His daughter wrote a beautiful book about him and what a wonderful community man he was. He helped wherever he was. He always volunteered.
I don't know if Sean mentioned this, and I think it actually appears in the film, so I think you did, Sean. But for many years, a lot of Haverhill people here say there was a chalk drawing in the old high school, which became City Hall for many years, that were Archie characters. Is that, Sean, how you the story's been related to you?
The story I recall was there was a drawing on a chalkboard in a classroom, and that finally was destroyed in 1955 or erased. But it wasn't of Archie characters. It was of a gag of a cowboy and such. So Archie characters being at the Haverhill High School in a drawing form, I never saw that myself or heard of that.
Okay, so he was definitely illustrating, but he wasn't sharing very much information then.
Yeah, well, he was very... he would give drawings out to friends and people he knew. He was always sketching from everybody I've talked to who went to Haverhill High School. They always recall him drawing stuff. In fact, some of the people that I interviewed for the for the book weren't even aware that he created Archie. So they just recall him drawing caricatures of teachers and such and were surprised to hear that he was the guy who created Archie. So it was pretty fun to listen to stories and not be... and not let on who he was.
All right, Sean and Betty, thank you very much for joining us tonight. It's been a real treat. We're all looking forward to seeing, and I want to encourage our listeners and our viewers to see Archie's Betty, co-produced by Sean Clancy and Gerald Peary, and you will see the real Betty in this film. So it's at the Institute of Contemporary Art, 100 Northern Avenue in Boston. That's Boston's waterfront. And you have a chance to see it Sunday, June 14th at either noon or 3 p.m. And you can't beat the price. $5 for members or students and $10 for non-members. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for even interviewing me, because it's been an honor and a pleasure to be honored like this.
Well, it's certainly been a pleasure, and we wish you the very best, and I am going to strive to do my exercises now that I've seen you do them so well.
Now, tell me, what is your name again so I can have memories of you interviewing me?
All right, I'm Tim Coco, C-O-C-O.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, Sean mentioned that, and I just remembered. Thank you very much, Mr. Coco.
Well, thank you very much.
All right.
And as we continue our birthday gift to Sean and our listeners, we're going to go out with a clip from Archie Radio from the Archie Radio Show, where he mentions reading something in the Gazette. And I don't know if that's a connection or not to Haverhill's paper, but we're going to say that it was. Okay? Sean, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tim, for having us.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
We'll go to that clip, and then we'll go to the closing. We'll be back with more of the Open Mic Show next week at the same time. Thank you very much.
Archie, I still don't understand what we're doing here at the hotel. Jug, for the last time, I've got to get that box of candy back. I got it.
Why?
Because it's poison. My mother could get electrocuted for that. Do you think I want to start the summer being an orphan?
Yeah. But what's this camera for?
That's how we'll get the candy back, Jug. I'll say I'm a photographer from the Gazette, and I want to take Hepzibah's picture. Then, while I keep her busy, you steal that box of poison candy.
Open mic!
Join Tim Coco live on the Open Mic again next Monday night at 6:30. The opinions expressed on the Open Mic show are not necessarily those of WHAV, its underwriters, or affiliated stations. The Open Mic show came to you from the Edwin V. Johnson Newsroom.
It's 8:31.
Phil Christie here. Did you know you can hear comedy and drama every night? Listen to these remastered classics at 10 p.m. and 1 a.m. Only local radio can bring you this combination of music, news, and features. But only WHAV does.
Catch the wave!
This is Tom Hartman inviting you to tune into the Tom Hartman Program on WHAV every weekday beginning at noon. I'm here 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, taking your calls live and providing all the news you need to know. The Tom